Welcome back, everybody, to Inside Texas Basketball. I, as always, am joined by Keenan Womack. I'm in a different setup here, but you can see Keenan's got his shades as always. Keenan, how you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm very glad to be talking about an actual game and not some sort of off-season conversation. I'm glad that there's another game to be played.
Yeah, no NIT declines or anything like that for Texas because they had a pretty successful March Madness run. The last time we talked to y'all was right before that Vanderbilt game, but Texas beat Vanderbilt pretty convincingly, up 15 with about 5 minutes left. Game got a little bit closer, but Longhorns seemed to be in control for most of that game, Keenan. And then that A&M game was really the one that we're going to kind of dive into here. So many good things to talk about, but what was kind of that first thing that stood out to you about that real thriller of a game they played against the Aggies?
Well, you know, A&M is such a physical team that, like, I thought, because, and also A&M was shooting the three well, which they don't typically do.
Yep.
So they're shooting the hell out of the ball, and you're thinking, well, if this team that doesn't shoot the ball well is shooting the ball well, you're probably out of luck. But no, man, they just played such a physical game, and I was just really impressed with just not backing down from a challenge. You know, I mean, they had to play a game the next day, and we'll talk about that in a second. And I think the physicality of this game impacted their performance the next day. And that's just the kind of way that A&M plays. Is they're just very they put a body on you when the ball's loose in the air. They get a lot of offensive rebounds. It's kind of their game. But Texas did a great job taking care of the ball in this game. And I think that that was the key, in my opinion, to winning this game, was taking care of the ball, not allowing A&M to force a bunch of turnovers and get into transition. I think that was super important.
Yeah, and this felt like one of those games that a Texas team, maybe even just 2 months ago, would have crumbled a bit because A&M got their physicality down. You know, Anderson Garcia hit 4 threes. Wade Taylor almost put up 30 points, 17 of those from free throws. But, you know, it just felt like a lot of A&M's formula was going, and the things they needed to extenuate and the extra things that needed to happen were happening. But Texas got this game into overtime and just a great performance there afterwards. And the Longhorns didn't crumble. They kept up with the physicality. They broke the press, which was an important thing that you didn't see them do earlier in the season. But I know you wanted to talk about this, but that Tremone Mark point guard play that has really started in this tournament and really been adapted by Coach Rodney Terry. What have you liked from that change for this offense?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like that should have been tried earlier this season because it's been very successful, right? I mean, you have guys like Pope and Larry, and I've talked about both of those guys and why they've struggled, but I'll quickly recap what I've said before, which is, you know, Julian Larry came from a system at Indiana State where he didn't have to create off the dribble all that much, right? It was that offense was very it was basically came down to off ball screening and off ball action and kicking the ball around, a lot of motion, stuff like that. So you get to Texas and they run a completely different offense that doesn't look like that. You know, Julian Larry is expected to do a lot more than he's probably ever been asked to do in his life as a point guard. So that's caused him to struggle. And then Jordan Pope came from Oregon State where he was asked to score all of their points. And you know, it's hard to be a distributing point guard when you're a scoring guard. Like, he's just not that kind of guard. He's more of a microwave scorer off the bench, ideally in his role. For my money, that's what he should be doing, is coming off the bench as like a guy that can come in and randomly get you 10, 15 points. Mm-hmm. Tremone Mark is really interesting because he's so versatile, right? He's a guy that's played in three different systems. He's played at Houston, he's played at Arkansas, now he's played at Texas. All three of which, you know, the first two stops, he played under, you know, Sampson, and then he played under Musselman. So he's played under completely different philosophies as far as offense and defense goes. So I don't think Tremone Mark as a freshman could have taken up the mantle and played point guard. But I think the fact that he's played so many years understands how these things work as far as like, you know, how to react to his teammates off the ball and things like that. I think that it's interesting to try that at this point in the season. And I think that also opponents don't have nearly as much film on him as a point guard as they would on the other guys. So that's an advantage too, is you only have 3 games worth of film of Tremone Mark playing point guard. He does have to stop fouling though.
Oh yeah. 100%. And I think what I really like most about this this set that they have is you really felt the Kendall Weaver impact finally being healthy. You know, they kept talking about it during the SEC tournament about how Texas played, what, 8 games with their real full rotation, and Weaver just shot electricity into this defense mostly, but he was one of 6 players that scored in double digits, and I really like the Mark Johnson-Weaver lineup. I think that gives you good defense, it gives you good length, and Weaver is allowed to kind of do those corner backdoor cuts. Trey Johnson can still hit his right side. He was great from 3 in this game, and then Mark handling the ball, getting to his spots, and hitting those mid-range jumpers, almost Marcus Carr-esque the way he was getting that little bit of separation, finding a jump shot in the mid-range, which not always the most efficient, but if he's going to make them, it's great. So he gave Texas 15 points, not the most efficient shooting, but Jordan Pope, it allowed his efficiency to really open up in the game. And then Caden Shedrick, you know, 10 for 10 from the free throw line, especially when it mattered most, felt like he had about 6 down the stretch that you were clenching your fist, like, oh, is this going to go in? And he delivered every time. And I thought he had a very good overall game. Not fouling out was super important when 2 other Texas Longhorns did. Shedrick, I think, played great. I even think Onyema had a good game. The big men for Texas in the tournament, I think, really stepped it up. Did you have that same feeling, Keenan?
Yeah, I did. You know, even in the games that where it wasn't all in the stats, there was a lot of intangible stuff that those guys were doing. You know, just setting the occasional screen. You know, I mean, there were sets where Shedrick will set screens in the high post, so like a high pick and roll, and then run a slip screen out of that. So he did a lot of that in some of these games. And I think that it's super important to have a guy like Shedrick, even if he's not scoring a lot of points, which he did in certain instances score some points too. But I just really like what he brings from a maturity standpoint as a big, right? Like, he is a guy that played at Virginia, and Virginia has a very good defensive system. They call it the pack line defense. Now, I don't know what they're running now, but this is when Tony Bennett was the head coach there. So he's a guy with good defensive instincts that were drilled into him by Tony Bennett, right? So that's the thing with this team that's interesting, is a lot of these transfers have played for other coaches who have completely different philosophies. And that's part of probably the reason why things struggled to gel at the beginning of the year. But it feels like they're playing their best basketball of the season right now, which is about as good as it gets if you're looking for, you know, a team that get hot going into the tournament. You know, if they can now, you know, we'll talk about this game next, but if they can pull this off, you know, I don't think they're completely out of the picture to beat a team like Illinois in the next
round. Yeah, and the Longhorns, they outscored Texas A&M 15-10 in that last overtime period. Yep. Trey Johnson and Tramone Mark with those big threes. I think Pope also had a big one as well. Shedrick, as always, doing what we were saying about the 10 free throws. And then, you know, Texas does go on to play Tennessee. It kind of felt like, and I think we both had the same sentiment we were talking about, that, you know, this team was just a little bit too gassed playing a team that had all that time of rest. Tennessee, obviously, a superior opponent, one that really chokes you down on the defense, wants you to make errant passes. Zakai Ziegler, the SEC Defensive Player of the Year. And Texas kept it within reach for a good bit of the game, but it felt like Tennessee truly was in command. Is there anything that you got from that game that maybe will translate better into the tournament that you'd like from Texas, or even some concerns that might have shown up that might come up against Xavier, which we'll talk about later?
Yeah, so I tweeted this out after it happened, but I think the first half of that game was maybe the best half they've played of basketball this entire season, given the circumstances, of course, right? You're coming off of 2 games in 2 days before that, but not just 2 games in 2 days, a highly emotional, highly physical game the day before, right? Mm-hmm. That A&M game took it out of them. It would take it out of anybody. You're playing your rival. You do not want to lose the rubber match, right? It's game 3 of a 3-game series, and you've split the first 2, and you know, I've been emphasizing it the whole time, but guys like Farrell Payne, you know, and Henry Coleman in the post, like, those guys beat you up. They're physical as hell. So they come out of that game and they're gassed. I'm sure they were. And I was just so impressed with the first half they played. I didn't think they were going to win that game. Even after that first half, I figured that first half is as good as it's going to get for this team. I don't see them coming into the second half and winning, but I was so impressed with the way they played in spite of all of the circumstances, being as exhausted as they were and just being beat up. And they just still played super hard in the first half. They just ran out of gas in the second half. But I was really impressed with the first half of that game from Texas.
Yeah, something that really stuck out to me was kind of the rotational minutes and the way that Roddy Terry was playing against Tennessee. Julian Larry's a guy who's getting about 20 minutes a game throughout this whole year, played only 6 in this one. Onyema and Pryor combined for 8, kind of just, you know, minutes to get Shedrick some rest, get some other guys out. But it felt like Texas is finally able to hit a 7-man rotation that they really want to play, and that allows them to rotate the guards really well between Pope, between Mark, between Johnson, between Weaver. And so I think if Weaver and Kent can give Texas these minutes, they come out for 42 minutes, 17 points on extremely efficient shooting. If they can do that with also having their long arms, their energy on defense, that's going to translate really well into this NCAA tournament that's coming up. And, you know, tonight, actually, when they're playing, and, you know, Shedrick had a really efficient game as well. Trey Johnson just wasn't able to shoot that much. That's what Tennessee really does well, is making sure your star player isn't turning into a nightmare for them. And so that's not going to happen against some of these teams that they're going to play coming up. And I liked what I saw from how Terry's been coaching throughout this entire last 5-game stretch. I think the Mark thing, like you said, maybe could have come earlier, but because it's happened and because the rotation's getting a little bit finer and a little bit more refined, I like what I'm seeing from Rodney Terry. And that's part of why, you know, he's not already fired and why this team is actually playing meaningful basketball in March.
Yeah, definitely, man. It is a little late, but it's better late than never in this situation, because I think, you know, figuring out that little tweak of throwing Mark at lead initiator is the reason that they are in the tournament right now. I don't think they would have made it otherwise.
Agreed. And we're going to get right to this tournament, but first we're going to talk to Andre the Lawyer and hear what he has to say.
This video is brought to you by Andre the Lawyer. If you're injured, trust the team that secured millions for their clients and helped thousands of Texans with their injury case. Car wrecks, slip and falls, 18-wheeler accidents, on-the-job injuries, and wrongful deaths. Don't let insurance tell you what your claim is worth. Hire Andre the Lawyer to fight for you. Principal office is in Dallas, but they serve Texans throughout the state. So don't wait and call Andre the Lawyer today at 214-444-8808. That's 214-444-8808. The contact information is in the description.
So as every Texas fan now knows at this point, Texas is in that field of 68. They're not technically dancing yet. Have a matchup in the 11 versus 11 play-in versus Xavier. And it's a familiar matchup for the Longhorns. It's 2 years ago with that amazing 2023 team. Beat them in the Sweet 16 when they were a 2-3 seed matchup. Still the same coach, Sean Miller. A few guys still remaining, but mostly these two teams are very different at very different levels of skill at this point, why they're the play-in. But at least Texas is in. They're playing meaningful basketball in March, like we said. Keenan, first of all, this Xavier team is really notable with their shooting. It's a team that you don't want to get to the line because they're top 10 in free throw percentage, but they're also top 10 in three-point percentage, something that both of those Texases struggled with. What are you seeing from those players individually that makes them so successful from three, and how can Texas combat this, you know, streaky and strong shooting that the Xavier team possesses?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of Xavier's offense comes from ball reversals, ball movement. They're very heavy on trying to kick the ball around the perimeter and find open spots for either shots or drives. Like you said, they're a great shooting team, and that is really what makes them dangerous. Is that also, if you get into a game where you start fouling a lot, if it's a ref show like we saw in the SEC tournament, Texas is going to have a real tough time in this game because Xavier's top 10 free throw percentage, which is super important in March, and people sometimes overlook this stat. But it's so important to be able to shoot your free throws in March, man. Like, so many games come down to a couple of free throws here and there counting. And the fact that they're top 10 in both of these, if you'll remember a few years ago in the 2022 run when Texas played Colgate in the first round, Colgate was a team that was shooting like over 40% from three. Now, Xavier, I think, is like 39%, so they're pretty close to that. But I remember thinking, wow, is Texas going to get upset and lose to a, you know, 52. I guess a 15 seed? Yeah. It didn't happen. They ended up winning by 20. But, you know, that team and this team are much different. So when Xavier comes out on offense and they're trying to – basically they're just trying to get guys open off the ball as much as possible, and they are very good at off-ball cuts and off-ball screens and just a lot of motion is going on basically. There's a lot of things going on each possession. It can get confusing to defend. And that's why, you know, whether you switch or whether you don't switch, it's kind of up to the coach what he wants to do to defend their offense, because it is very explosive in a lot of ways, because they can shoot so well. They do get open looks. They create open looks a lot. And they're a team that really can shoot you out of a game. They are really talented with Zach Fremantle and Ryan Conwell, who are they're both of their leading scorers. Fremantle's more of a post player, right? He's a guy that's averaging 17.7 rebounds a game. And then Conwell is sort of a guard. But they have other important players too, right? They have guys like Jerome Hunter and Dante Maddox. You know, when Hunter comes off the bench, he's a very explosive player for them, really important piece of what they do. And, you know, the starting lineup for this team has changed a few times this year, but I think it's solidified now. But they also have really good players coming off the bench for them. So it's tough to game plan to defend an offense that moves the ball so well, that is just so reliant on ball reversals and things like that. But it is a game that Texas is going to have to shoot well to compete in.
Yeah, and it seems like not only just a 1-5 assignment list, you know, the perimeter defenders and Shedrick down low needing to do well, but Ronnie Terry's going to have a good game plan coming into this. You mentioned Fremantle, you mentioned Hunter. Those are two of the only players on this team still remaining from that matchup 2 years ago, both super veterans in the college basketball game. I think both hitting that like 24 age mark around that. So both are extremely experienced, and that is obviously so important in March. Teams need to have experience to be able to play and have the ability to know what they're doing, even though the Xavier team missed it last year. They are still very well coached by Sean Miller, and a lot of this personnel really helps them out in the transition game. I think his name was Swain.
Dalen Swain,
is that his name? Who's just a fantastic, fantastic perimeter defender. McKnight does a great job of distributing the ball, and has some of the things that they have that you kind of wish Texas had some of these guys on their team, the way that their presence is felt during the game. But Xavier's obviously an 11 seed. You know, they struggled really early in the season. I think they lost like 7 of 10 around that December, January mark. Yep. Have really improved since then. What are the weaknesses of this offense and their general philosophy that could be exploitable for Texas's defense?
Yeah, well, I mean, they get big minutes from guys who aren't offensive threats. Like Dalen Swain isn't the offensive threat maybe that some of these other guys are. And their philosophy is just ball movement as much as possible, and just keeping you on your toes defensively, not allowing you to set your feet and keeping you in flux, essentially. So, you know, it's interesting to look at this roster and just kind of see, you know, which guys are impact guys, which guys like on offense, and which guys are more of impact guys on defense. You know, Swain's 10.5 points, 5.5 rebounds, 2.5 assists a game, 52% from the field. But his perimeter defense, like you said, is very elite. The other thing about this team is 6 of their 8 rotation guys are seniors. And then, you know, Conwell is a junior and Dalen Swain's a sophomore. So very experienced team overall. This is a team that has a lot of guys that have played a lot of college basketball games. But you look at Texas roster, they have a lot of seniors too. You know, so I don't think you can use that as an excuse if you going into this game. I think it's going to be one of those things where, like, you have to be ready to play perimeter defense. You have to be ready to rotate hard on the perimeter, make sure that there's not, you know, open shots on off ball screens or movement shots, or maybe they'll run an Iverson cut or something like that. They are just very good at getting open. That's part of the reason they have such high 3-point percentages. The motion is very, very well designed by Sean Miller, and it just kind of works for them. And it's, again, like you said, they've improved drastically over the second half of the season. This is a team that kind of got hot, you know, at a certain point. So it's a team that you don't necessarily want to face in the first four, but there's a reason that they're in it. And it's because they had a stretch in earlier in the season where they lost, let's see, they lost 4 out of 5 at one point, and then they lost 2 out of 3. But over their last, you know, 8 or 9 games, they've only lost once, and that was to a ranked Marquette team. So this is a team that is a lot hotter probably than Texas might be, at least for a longer stretch of time.
Yeah, it's a strong Big East here. You know, St. John's making a great run. Even UConn's still pretty good and loved by the KenPom rankings. And Xavier's made their name and made a case to be in this tournament, obviously. But, you know, as we're talking about this 3-point percentage, we have the stats put up right here. every player in this rotation outside of two are 35% shooters, and the two are a defensive, you know, expert and a big man who's mostly playing in the post, only really need to shoot if he's wide open in the corner. And I think when you were talking about that experience, it really had me thinking about Trey Johnson and how important he's going to be in this game, because not only is he going to have to be the offensive catalyst for Texas as he usually is, but he needs to be consistent and smart on defense, not let these players who have all this March experience get to his head when it's his first time doing any of this, and it's going to be his last time potentially if he doesn't, you know, step up correctly in this game. So Johnson will be a big threat to this Xavier defense. And as our own Paul Wadlington has written about, the Xavier defense is maybe not what you're, when you're scouting, you're, they're most scared of. It's not their most intense part of their team culture. And outside of Swain, they don't truly have any superior defensive players. And as a team, it's not the best defensive team in the Big East. So what are you seeing from the Xavier defense, and how do you think they're going to try to combat Mark as a main initiator, Trey Johnson's ability to shoot and score from really anywhere he wants?
Yeah, so they're a team that they're going to switch on the perimeter for the most part. Their guards are going to switch on Trey and Mark and stuff like that. But, you know, their bigs typically play drop or they hedge. So you're not going to get a lot of big of switches in the post, right? So, you know, really they're also – Xavier is good at not fouling on the defensive end. I think that that's part of their philosophy. They control the glass defensively. That's another kind of hallmark of what they do. So they can control the tempo of the game, because they're, you know, they're trying to play their own tempo, and they can do that more easily if they can control the defensive glass, which they're pretty good at doing. Again, you know, their ball pressure is not anything special, really. Like, other people have said, it's not a team that's going to, they're not a Tennessee. They don't have a Jemai Mashak and a Zakai Ziegler out there. Again, Dalen Swain's very good, and he's a guy that's getting, you know, he'll return to college because he's not quite an NBA prospect yet. I don't think he's like borderline second round on some, in some, some people's mocks, but you know, it is a team that I think Texas can exploit defensively. I feel like this will be a high-scoring game just because, you know, Xavier shoots the hell out of the ball. They're a very, very good shooting team. And then Texas has, you know, kind of found a new identity with Tramone Mark as lead initiator. So, you know, if you're a betting man out there, I guess I would look at the over for this game. I'm not, but, you know, if you are, maybe think about that. But, yeah, I mean, again, the things to note are the guards are going to switch. The post players are typically not going to switch. They're going to hedge, or they're going to, you know, play drop. Those are essentially what you have to look at for the Xavier defense.
Yeah, and I think what really stands out when you're just strictly looking at stats, but also diving in deeper, is, you know, you've seen that blocks in the top right. Zach Fremantle is leading the team, but that number is less than one. And you look farther, they're the worst team at shot blocking in the Big East. There's not a true center on this team. Fremantle is truly a power forward. Hunter is also more of a power forward. Swain, you know, he's the only other guy with 0.5 blocks outside of those two, and he's even listed as a guard here on ESPN. Yeah. This is not a team that has shot blockers. It's not a team that's going to impose your will in the paint. That seemed to have given Texas some fits in the past. Like Cliff O'Marrory in that game against Alabama just dominated the Longhorns when they tried to drive the basket. And, you know, we'll sound like a parrot almost from how we've been talking these last few episodes, but it's just been consistent. Texas needs to get to the rim, Trey Johnson has to do it. Tramone Mark has to do it. Now, Mark, I think, is someone in the drop coverage that can exploit maybe the floater game a little bit if Fremantle can't get a hand up and contest him. But Texas needs to be able to get to this rim and force them to foul, because, like you've already mentioned, they're not a team that fouls that much. I think they're bottom five in the Big East in doing that. And so Texas really needs to get Fremantle into foul trouble, because he doesn't quite initiate their offense, but he's someone that they can kind of dump to get him on a high screen. Get easy buckets really is what his game is. So if the Longhorns can get that 17-7 out of the game early in the first half, get him to that two foul mark, I think that'll be really important for this offense and just the overall catalyst of Johnson's game becoming, you know, a complete game instead of just doing the step back threes and these chuck ups from near midcourt.
Yeah, it is kind of unfortunate that I feel like the winner of this game is going to be the team that gets to the foul line more. That's just kind of what it feels like to me, because, you know, if you let Xavier get to the foul line more times than you, there's a very good chance you lose, because they're going to hit a good majority of those free throws. I feel like Texas' goal should be to make as many free throws as Xavier takes. That was an old former Texas coach thing, you know, was take as many, make as many take as many free throws as the other team makes, or whatever, the opposite of whatever I just said. You know what I'm saying, though. You know, it's unfortunate that you are in a situation where the fouls are going to matter that much, but that's just kind of where we are with the ref shows we've seen. And that's how it was in the SEC tournament a lot of the time. There were a lot of games where it felt like the officiating kind of took over for the players, you know what I mean? Like the refs became the stars.
Yep.
But I mean, overall, I think this is an exploitable defense. I think that, like you said, when Mark kind of gets into that painted area and they're playing drop, maybe he can use the floater. Maybe he can figure out a way to kick out to an open shooter. We've seen Trey has improved drastically at doing that. That's the thing that he's gotten great at, is those skip passes either from the lane or from the corner. And sometimes he makes me nervous with the passes. He just rips across the floor that like just barely miss a defender's hand, you know, but they end up in the right place. So, yeah, I think this is going to be more of a high scoring game. I don't know what the over under is, but I am curious to see what it is.
Yeah, and as we've talked a lot about, you know, Fremantle and Swain in particular, those two guys where you kind of know what their role is going to be. Swain, that defensive stopper, the guy who's going to try to switch on to your ball handler. Fremantle, get him in the post in the paint. But someone that we really haven't touched on, and the stats speak for themselves, is Ryan Conwell, who was a part of that Indiana State team last year, which, man, has that team aged well. You got two guys from that Robbie Avila group that went on to St. Louis, and then you have Kenton Larry playing at Texas, and then Conwell, who's one of the top scorers for the Xavier team, all of those teams making the tournament. And so Conwell, what does he do so well at? How does he get to that 17 points a game? Obviously that 42% from three sticks out, but specifically on the court and his actions, what do you see from him?
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that obviously shoots very well from three, but he's a guy that does a lot of his damage off the dribble, right? And he's a guy that's transferred three times. He started at South Florida, then he went to Indiana State, now he's at Xavier. But he is a guy that has improved a little bit at every stop he's gone to. And, you know, he's averaging similar points to what he averaged at Indiana State last year, but he's being asked to do more, right? Because as I've said before, I watched a lot of Indiana State last year because I wanted to see what Julian, Larry, and Jason Kent were capable of. So I watched some of their games, and the offense that Josh Schertz ran at Indiana State was gorgeous. It was all off-ball cuts. There was no dribbling at all. So it's interesting that Conwell does a lot of his damage off the dribble because, you know, at Indiana State, those guys weren't being asked to do that as much. Really speaks to his talent level. You know, 45% from the field, and like you said, 42% from three. And, you know, it's not like he's taking two threes a game. He's doing this on seven threes per game. So he's probably one of the top 3-point shooters just by volume in the Big East, I'd imagine. I mean, that's a lot of threes a game in college, is 7.3. And to be able to do that, the other thing he does is he gets to the line, right? He's getting to the line four times per game, and he's hitting 83% of his free throws. And he's just a guy he's just a bucket, man. He's just a guy that finds his way to the rim. He's a guy that can hit shots from outside. He can do it off the dribble. He can do it off the catch some too. Just a really, really dynamic scorer. And probably outside of Fremantle, probably their most important player.
Definitely. And, you know, as we're wrapping it up here in the 30-minute mark, you know, I'd love to hear, Keenan, A, your just general prediction for this game. I don't know if you come in thinking about that, but also, what do you think is the key to success? What will make sure that the Texas Longhorns can face Illinois next round and get to that next level of March Madness?
Yeah, man. I think it's going to come down to perimeter rotations in this game. Like, can you stay tight after a screen? Can you find your man? Can you fight over the screens? That's another thing. They cannot go under the screen in this game. They're going to have to fight over every screen because these teams are so good at shooting the three. Or this team's so good at shooting the three that if you get lazy even once, bam, that's probably going to be 3 points for the other team. So fight over screens, tight perimeter rotations, you know, take advantage of the fact that they're not a good shot blocking team. Take advantage of the fact that they don't have post control. Take advantage of the fact that they don't have a big center and attack that rim, man. Get some easy shots, get to the foul line, collapse the defense a little bit, kick out, get Trey some easier shots so he's not expending all of his energy in the first half trying to get to his spots. And I think that's where Tremont Mark comes in and becomes a very important piece, is if he's driving to the basket and he's starting to do that in this game and they start collapsing the defense and he can find Trey. Trey can get some easy looks, get a couple of the go in early, and then bang, you have a on fire Trey Johnson. And that's not something you want to see if you're Xavier.
Yeah, and I think Texas having probably the best player in this game will play a big factor. I agree with you. Getting within that, you don't need to beat them on free throws and 3-point, but I think if you're within that number, then you're probably in a good spot here for the Longhorns. Texas playing tonight, I think it's 8:10 Central is the official time. Right now I'm seeing on ESPN Sportsbooks that Xavier is the favorite team, but yep. Texas has every chance here to make a big stand. They're in that part of the bracket against Illinois, and it would be the 60 that they would play. So for now, Rodney Terry's squad's just got to get a win here, really for everyone's sake, in everyone's involvement. And the Longhorns have a big game ahead of us tonight, and make sure you're all tuning in. Make sure you're all subscribing over at On3 and Inside Texas. Inside Texas is your go-to place for everything from football recruiting to college baseball to basketball. We've got it all covered here. Keenan and I are both contributing a lot there in the written portion. So if you want somewhere to go follow along with this game, for sure, check out Inside Texas, and make sure you're tuning into your TVs tonight. I think True TV is the host of this game, which is always
the only thing. Yeah, I was gonna say all they show is Impractical Jokers and tournament games.
I love some Impractical Jokers on a vacation. Either way, that's all from me here, from Evan and Keenan here at Inside Texas. Any last words, Keenan?
Nah, man. Just hope we have another game to talk about.
Yeah, me as well. And Longhorns got a big one tonight. We'll see y'all next time. Hopefully next time we'll be talking about some basketball and not about the offseason. We'll see y'all there.